Okay, translation. Oh Father, this performance in which you are endeavoring, I'm sorry, oh Father, this performance in which you are endeavoring to complicate yourself was never attempted by any other Brahma, nor by anyone else, nor by you in previous kalpas, nor will anyone dare to attempt it in the future with a supreme being in the universe. So how is it that you want to have sex with your daughter and cannot control your desire? And Prabhupada says, the post of Brahma is the supermost post in the universe, and it appears that there are many Brahmas and many universes besides the one in which we are situated. Okay? So on the right, if you can see it, we have a very nice picture here. Did some kind of search on the internet. And this is, where is this? It's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, I think the story, maybe to Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana Shiksha. And Lord Brahma comes, and he wants to see Krishna in Dwarka. And the gatekeeper comes back and says, Krishna is asking which Brahma? And Lord Brahma's bewildered because he didn't know there are other universes. He said, well, the Brahma who has four heads. And then Krishna allows him to come in. And then he pays his obeisances. And then he asks Krishna, well, you said like which Brahma, but are there others? So Krishna calls all the Brahmas. And here we see the picture. And if you look in the center of Krishna's lotus feet, there's a little Brahma there. Our Brahma. And pretty small, you know. And there's other guys, and they said there were, you know, some with 10,000 heads, some with 1,000,000 heads, you know. So it's kind of bizarre that ours is the smallest, you know, of all these universes, you know. Even if you were inventing all this, I don't think you would do that. You would invent something, you know, middle place. You know? And I think about all the heads, because usually you try and put them on biologically, like a big pile of roses or something in a vase, you know. But it would seem, things more accurate would be like, you know, just like a computer with you know, several hard drives. It's accessing them simultaneously, or several, you know, divided hard drive. It's more like a subtle, you know, subtle representation of intelligence like that. You know? But anyway, we show them with four physical heads like that. So this is Prabhupada's first point, you know, that there appears to be more than one Brahma. Okay. Then Prabhupada goes on. One who fills this post must be ideal in behavior, for Brahma sets the example for all living beings, all living entities. Okay. So this is, of course, a very important point, is that in the Upadeshamrita, which constitutes first instructions for neophyte devotees, it starts off by saying, text one, that people, the first-class person understands by hearing from authoritative source, shastras, you know, the spiritual master explaining shastras. Yeah. Okay. A second-class person can't understand just by that, and he has to see an example. Oh, okay, I see this, I see that. Okay, now he understands. Okay. Then a third-class person has to personally experience it. Okay. Then a fourth-class person, even after hearing it, seeing it, experiencing it, still hasn't got it figured out. And so he has to, you know, suffer again and again like that and so on. You know? So somebody who's first class isn't so dependent upon Brahma's example. He can understand things from a different perspective. So maybe, again, Marichi and people like that, being more first class, can see the situation of Brahma. But they may think, oh, okay, if this is happening with Brahma, well, it's okay for all of us, and you can't be too strict, you know, so we can all do this, you know. But they, being first class, or may, guided by the scripture, say, well, no, this is not permitted. And then thinking, well, okay, then Brahma's example must have some kind of, Brahma's activity must maybe have some kind of example to it, like that, to teach us, you know. We heard Vidagdha Prabhu's class yesterday. It was very, very conclusive, very broad, very deep, and very inspiring like that. And in some ways, we haven't got much to say. Maybe we can repeat some of the ideas, because some people here today weren't there yesterday. Yeah. Of course, we're in the third canto here, and we're already climbing up one of Krishna's legs in our attempt to reach his smiling face. Cantos 1 and 2 are lotus feet. We have our face in the dirt in front of Krishna. Please forgive me. Oh, boy. And saying that repeatedly, Om Agyanatimirandasya, you sent Srila Prabhupada, he's opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge, and I have promptly closed them again. Oh, just 5 more minutes, Prabhupada. Just 5 more minutes in Maya, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, maybe we're advanced beyond the first 2 cantos. And then we have to be following the 4 principles. Otherwise, these things won't be so comprehensible. 2.2.12, it talks about that. Okay. And 3 and 4 is described are Krishna's legs. So now we're starting to look up, you know, and we begin to see if Krishna has on a dress or pants or shorts, you know. Yeah. So some more beginning of intimacy, more subtle relationship here. And, of course, the first part of this is just how Vidura met Maitreya, you know, by coming in contact with Uddhava. And the sages and everybody else wanted to hear about these more advanced topics. End of Canto 2, we hear about Mahavishnu and other things like that. But then Krishna explained the situation in Dwarka, which is beyond that, to Uddhava. So Vidura wanted to hear that from Maitreya. And practically speaking, I don't think he ever even heard it. You know? He goes all the way through the 5th canto discussing with Maitreya. And as far as I know, he ever never really asked about Dwarka. So I'm just satisfied with appreciating Krishna as Mahavishnu. Because if we can get there, boy, we've gone a long way, you know. And now we can begin our investigation, our self-realization, our individuation, to quote Carl Jung. Maslow calls it, you know. Yeah. From a much higher level, much secure level, much clearer level. Yeah. So that's going through the story of the creation of the world. We live in this world. I think I live in this world to a large degree. I've noticed, maybe it's just because I'm becoming older. Older devotees can probably point this out, that we're not becoming more more self-realized. We're becoming more stupid like that. Before, in the beginning, in Anamaya, you think you're this world. In Pranamaya, you think you are this body. Okay. In Manomaya, you think you are this civilized person. So maybe as we're falling down, we're falling back from Manomaya back to Pranamaya and Anamaya and beginning to identify with the universe. Hopefully we're going up and we're beginning to see the world from a more just intellectual purpose point. You know, why are they doing that? Why is that happening? You know, I look out my window now and I see so many cars going by left and right on Medical Center Parkway. And you start looking, you start seeing a lot of intellectual things, you know, a lot of perspectives on things. You know? There's a lot of information there. And then, of course, the thing is you start to see things, how, you know, the elements are there, how they're coming, they have to come from a certain source, how there has to be somebody controlling, you know, the different elements, the fire god, wind god, air god, you know, sound gods, you know, and begin to appreciate this actually from a very practical point of view. You can do things by manipulating this stuff. You know? And of course, really, you want to be able to appreciate how Krishna is behind everything. You know, Shyamasundar, you know, Gopal, yeah, you know, like that. So they start discussing the creation, Sarga, Visarga. And when they come to the this point somewhere here, they're discussing then how the creation of Brahma and things like that. We're in chapter 12. Pretty advanced here. And then, of course, his pastime comes up. Yeah? And very instructive, that's what's been coming up, is it's a very instructive point. Of course, you know, maybe we're reading a lot, you know. Vaisheshika said he reads 41 pages of Bhagavatam a day, kind of his vow. He said he took it up after hearing about how we did the whole Bhagavatam in 1 year. And then we figured out it was about 41 pages a day, you know. We were trying to do like one chapter a day or something like that. One canto a month to finish it off. Yeah. But it is. It's about 41 pages a day. But if you do that, you get such association with Prabhupada. You just start to see things, you know, from Prabhupada's point of view. Yeah. And again, You know, sex life is the most prominent thing. It's the most prominent thing in the spiritual world. It's Adiras. And it's the most prominent thing in Maya. You know? And of course, it's there in gross forms of, you know, gross agitation of the senses to touch the genitals of the opposite sex. Yeah. Smell them. Yes. Different species of life, you know, so on. Yes. But it's also there in the subtle sense, you know, that men want to see women dressed up in such a way that their aggressive masculine tendencies are stimulated by the type of textures and fabrics and things they're seeing, you know. And women want to control men by, you know, dressing in what such a way as to attract them and then control them. Yeah. So it's going on in more or less forms like that. You know? So here would be a nice example, a very good point for discussion. And of course, we're probably never going to exhaust it. You know? But this is the point. One point is that Brahma, he's the example, you know, for so many people in the universe. And again, some people are a little above this, like Marisha and other people like that. So they can look at it from a direct shastric perspective, not just from a gross example. So maybe Brahma studied an example for us here. Of course, the story is when he was born, or when he was appearing there, Vak, Sarasvati, appeared, and he was attracted to her for sexual relations, for, you know, something like that. Yeah. And again, one story Ramananda was quoting from that, you know, saying that he found some Hindu mythology thing, wasn't sure if it was bona fide or not. But as far as I know, the story is that he had five heads to start with. And he manifested like another head or something. Something happened like that. Because Saraswati tried to kind of like inch out of his vision. So then he manifested another head and she tried to move someplace else. And he started running after her. And then Shiva became infuriated by this. And he chopped off one of Brahma's heads and he ended up with four heads and kind of came to his senses, you know. So that's another story about the whole incident. But it kind of at least puts a perspective on it as we're understanding. And if you dug this, someone said yesterday there was no gross activity. And after this, Brahma then felt ashamed when he came to his, you know, intelligence and cast off his body. Of course, this means basically he just gave up that attitude. You know, he gave up that complex of thoughts like that. We can't do it sometimes. We just can't stop thinking about something, you know, like that. You know, grabs us. You know? And but Brahma, he's so subtle that he can give up, you know, gross bodies. He can put them on, take them off, like we put on, take off coats. He can give up his thought processes, but he's apparently attached to his body of booty. You know? He has a body of perspective attitude, which extends over something like three quarters of the universe. Now, he's almost on the level of the Paramatma in terms of the ability to understand everything that's going on just by his intelligence. You know? So anyway, this is Lord Brahma. You know, he's supposed to be exhibiting ideal behavior. Then Prabhupada goes on. Brahma, the living entity who is the most pious and spiritually elevated, is entrusted with a post next to that of the personality of Godhead. It's a very elevated person, and also very young, and also he has a very nice beard. Okay, thank you. That's it. That's a very short purport. Leave it up here. I'll pull up here. Rade, rade. Let's see. Bhaktivedanta database. There we go. Okay. Yeah. And yeah, we'll go up here to 19. Over there, we have heard that Brahma had a daughter named Vak who was born from his body and who attracted his mind by sex, although she was not sexually inclined toward him. Thus, finding her father so deluded in an act of immorality, the sages headed by Marichi, all sons of Brahma, spoke as follows with great respect. O Father, this performance in which you are endeavoring to complicate yourself is never attempted by any other Brahma, nor anyone else, nor by you in previous kalpas, nor will anyone dare to attempt it in the future. You are the supreme being in the universe. So how is it that you want to have a sex with your daughter and cannot control your desire? Even though you are a most powerful being, this act does not suit you because your character is followed by spiritual improvement for spiritual improvement by people in general. Let us offer our obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of God, and who by his effulgence, while situated in himself, has manifested the cosmos. May he also protect religion for all goodness. Okay. Yeah. And it says that Lord Brahma, thus seeing all his Prajapati's sons speaking in that way, became very much ashamed and gave up his body. So also yesterday, Vidagda made this point that we can only become free from these points. I think it was my text the last week, that even though one is very, very intelligent, you know, one can become free from these gross desires for lower enjoyment, Muladhara chakra, only when he's in a relationship with Krishna. And of course that requires Krishna's mercy. And so they prayed to the Supreme Lord, as mentioned yesterday, and then Lord Brahma, possibly because of that help, relinquished all these things. Of course, this had to be a different day of Brahma, because Brahma will seek out the benediction that he won't become over-illusioned if he stays involved in devotional service. It says that if he stays involved in devotional service, then he won't become illusioned, by these things, dealing with all these crazy species of life like that, and so on. So we don't have much more to offer. It's interesting because you can read these things. Konstantin Stanislavski, the great, father of Western theater technique. Very, very interesting, of course, very useful for our bhakti yoga. He said people don't go to the drama. They don't pay $50 to see Richard Burton or Sir John Gielgud, perform Shakespeare just to hear the words. They can stay home and do that for $1.50 or see all of the Shakespeare on the internet. What they come is not to hear the text, but the subtext, the purport, how you say it. For example, the way I did it, I read it before, was kind of respectful, but we can also have it like this. Oh, Father, this performance in which you are endeavoring to complicate yourself was never attempted by any other Brahma. It can be angry and chastising Lord Brahma. Or they can be, laughing in an insulting way. Or they can be laughing in the sense that Brahma is giving him a little sidelong wink. Hey, I'm doing this just to instruct other people. And even Sarasvati, knows that it's just a drama, and she's going, ooh, ah! That's part of the whole drama. You're putting on a drama for the children. So it seemed we didn't actually exhaust that and come to any conclusion yesterday, because Prabhupada kind of says, I think the Vishwanath Chakravarti, I think it was mentioned yesterday, supports the position that Marisha and everybody else, criticizing their GBC secretary or their Majjhimadhikari Diksha Guru or whoever, that they were doing it respectfully, and they weren't doing it out of envy to try and take his post or take his position. They wanted him to reform himself. They wanted him to, take the position and be their leader, like that. And again, maybe they saw, that why he was doing it. There was a higher purpose for this. So Vishwanath Chakravarti supporting that position. But then it's pointed out, and I didn't know where it was myself, but I was a member, that they, because there was something wrong or something, they took births at first as the sons of Hiranyakasipu, I guess the six of them. Then somehow or other that, they got, they crossed Hiranyakasipu or something, and then they had to take birth as the sons of Kalanemi. And I guess they agitated him, and he wanted to kill him or something, but couldn't do it, maybe because they were his sons. So next life, they took birth as the sons of Devaki, and he took birth as Kansa, and he was able to kill them. So many of these desires, you may think you have some desire in devotional service and anger towards somebody and this and that. It may not even show up in this lifetime. In the next lifetime, you may take birth in a religious society and get into a position where know, you satisfy your desires for revenge, you know, or something like that, or somebody else gets your desires. So very subtle, you know. We have to become very, very fine-bodied persons. We have to become very light. Our gross body, we have to purify it, you know, to the extent where it becomes an excellent mirror, you know, and we can see ourselves clearly in really these subtle platforms if we want to do that. If we want to get out of the material world with our devotional service, you know, or to speak if we want to go to subtler platforms like that, you know, like, you know, Goloka and so on. Maybe we can read Gopala Champu and get a taste, you know. But to be floating on that level and to have that association all the time, yeah, that's the position. So many subtle levels. And it's kind of what I think happened yesterday in the conclusions. One thing was about like a comment that these are all very, very high levels. And the example is cited many times of sannyas life. But that the highest level may not necessarily be, you know, for all grihastha ashrams. And so one question about that. Okay. One thing is that I mentioned was that the different varnas. Well, the varnas are the brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra varna. And the ashrams are ashrams that we're talking about. You know, brahmachari, grihastha, vanyas, sannyas. Okay, so Upadeshamrita constitutes first instructions for neophyte devotees. And it's going ahead here. And then Prabhupada's talking about the general principle of pushes, okay, how we can only control them if we get in touch with devotional service. Then he goes through one after another. First, the speaking power, okay. Then he goes to the restlessness of the fickle mind, vacho vegam manasa, okay. And of course that goes to anger, okay. Now then we go to the urges of the tongue, okay. Urges of the sex impulse. In a similar manner, the urges of the genitals, the sex impulse, can be controlled when not used unnecessarily. The genitals should be used to beget a Krishna conscious child. Otherwise, they should not be used. The Krishna consciousness movement encourages marriage not for satisfaction of the genitals, but for the begetting of Krishna conscious children. That's okay. And Prabhupada goes on like that. I think it's pretty clear. That doesn't mean that we're not devotees if we can't, you know, I would say good chance we're not, it's kind of marginal whether we're grihasthas or not, you know. Grihastha as opposed to grihamedi. Of course, there's things in between. Being somebody where the spiritual culture is first. So standard is no illicit sex. You know, so no, and that means, you're probably saying, is only sexual relations once a month when wife is in the time of her conception with good religious preparation like that and conscious activity. And well, is it possible? Well, maybe our environment, our situation, our karma, we may fall down. Okay. If it's an intentional fall down, okay, we may fall down and not come back. If it's an accidental fall down and we're being impulsed by different things, okay, then we keep on going. We solve the problem. And we understand, I can't eat late at night, you know, or whatever it is. Of course, we're a sannyasi, so not going to be talking a lot about the details here. You know, but others who are grihastha ashram, they can talk about these different details, about making different accommodations for sleeping and, you know, eating and arrangements, which then make the grihastha ashram, you know, a very motivating situation where the relationship between husband and wife is under control and it can do wonderful things. It can be the very best ashram, like that, so on, you know. And then be a good basis to come to the purification of vanaprastha, and then after that, sannyas, you know. And the sannyas, of course, it's not that there's any divorce. The husband and wife continue their connection. You know, if they're connected, well, why shouldn't they be connected on the level where we're trying to see everybody as our family? Yeah, the connection just goes. Ceases to be a gross connection. It ceases to be a subtle connection, and transforms in the best situation to a completely spiritual connection. You know, to where the husband and wife now are actually quite conscious of each other's swarup, and their service and their relationship, and remembering how they helped each other when they were in prison by taking up this gross relationships. That's our perspective on that topic. Another topic was, what about, where did all the women come from? If Brahma's going to be married, and he's the only living entity, then he's got to be married to his daughter. Okay, so we're back to the books, and we go here to Shivas, not the Bhagavad Gita. Radhe, Radhe. Yeah, books. Srimad Bhagavatam. This creation. Going to be the third canto. Yeah, it'll be. This is nice. It's the whole point. This Bhakti Bhai Baba course. One thing that's nice about it is we keep trying to get this general perspective where you can find your way around. And it doesn't mean that you have to know every verse number, but if you know, oh, that was daksha. That's what your daksha's prayers. That was that there. I mean, that's there. You know, then we can find our way around the Bhagavatam and find stuff quickly. So the Lord's pastimes in Vrindavan, outside of Vrindavan, divisions of creation, creation of the Kumaras and others. Okay. So this is where all the people start being created. And we'll come down here, and Rudra's causing a lot of problems for everybody. And I know, yeah, okay. So then they all become peaceful. I guess number 12. Is that what it is? Yeah. What happened to, okay. So I guess it's the same chapter. Okay. The fire sacrifices were being created. Okay, he created medical science, education, sacred theories. What happened to, what I'm looking for is Swayambhuva and Satarupa. There it is, okay. Okay, yeah. Okay, while it was, okay. Brahma thought to himself, alas, it is wonderful that in spite of my being scattered all over, there is still insufficient population throughout the universe. There is no other cause for this misfortune but destiny. While he was thus absorbed in contemplation and observing the supernatural power, two other forms were generated from his body. They are still celebrated as the body of Brahma. Yeah, okay. The two newly separated bodies united together in sexual relationship. Out of them, the one who had the female form became known as Swayambhuva Manu, and the woman became known as Satarupa. Okay. So it's the point is, it was necessary. The Manasaputra program was going too slow, so he needed to, implement something to speed it up. So then biological reproduction came in like that. Yeah? And in the purport, Prabhupada says, abracadabra. Okay. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Okay. The two bodies came out of the body of Brahma. One had a mustache, and the other had swollen breasts. This is in Prabhupada's books. I mean, there's so many things, and many of the things in Prabhupada's books are just like, you have to kind of like avert your eyes and go, oh my goodness, the things that Prabhupada talks about in the purports and the texts and everything else. You're not going to be in any way a naive, celibate simpleton. If you study these books, either a man or a woman, you're going to be just as much informed about the reality of things as anybody else who's out there sticking their nose in all of it like that, but in a dignified fashion. Upanishad says you have to learn the spiritual world and the material world side by side to understand it. Okay, so he had a big mustache and she had swollen breasts. No one can explain the source of their manifestation. It's interesting. No one can explain the source of their manifestation, and therefore until today they are known as Kayam, or the body of Brahma, with no indication of their relationship as his son or daughter. Kind of taking that to the best of our contemplative ability regarding Ramananda's question, it seems then it's just like you ask where the daughter came from, and it's just that she wasn't created by Brahma. Brahma seems to be running around creating all bachelor daddies, bachelor sons at this point, you know. But then with Swayambhuva Manu, you know, and Satarupa, then he has the first daughter in this sense. And again, whether Saraswati was created before this or after this, I don't know exactly. You know. But the point here is making is that, well, you know, Satarupa wasn't exactly kind of like created from Brahma. But it's almost more like this is a part of Brahma, that Vishnu just kind of shook his body and they came out. Yeah. So kind of our perspective on that, we're looking at that question. Yeah. So finally kind of finish off, because from a kind of a sannyas perspective, and many things, the sannyas and ISKCON, as astrologers, my own experience, everything else, I'm not sure what I was in my last lifetime. I think I was a Chinese-Mexican monk, like that. I love beans. I love Chinese poetry and philosophy. I like it more than I like Indian, you know, philosophy, culture, you know. Yeah. But, you know, I like Mexican food, vegetarian food. Yeah. So anyway, yeah. But somehow or other, I have this very strong sannyas karma, you know, and materially speaking. And so for me, it's very natural to get up in the morning early. It's very natural to have, you know, very simple relations with the opposite sex. I just don't know what to do in terms of these things, you know. I have a motivation. And study, whatever. So maybe some benediction or some work in the previous lifetime. But I feel it's just a material thing for the most part. You know? And what am I going to do with it? That's the next question. You know? Somebody else may have more passion or something or this and that, you know. But maybe they're going to finish it off all in this one lifetime and they won't have to come back. Whereas somebody can be like materially be a sannyasi for several lifetimes and not take the final purification. But the ashram does create good facilities, you know, good position like that. I've heard that Narottam Das Thakur said, if you're a sannyasi or a grihastha, and you chant Hare Krishna, it doesn't matter. And if you're a sannyasi or a grihastha, and you don't chant Hare Krishna, it doesn't matter. But the big thing is being a devotee like that. Then after that, the secondary thing is, am I in a male or female body? Okay. Am I in a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra body? Personally, as far as I can understand, I'm in a Shudra, Brahmana body. Okay. And so I have to do PowerPoints. I have to have like introspective, creative, imaginative stuff. At a certain point, I can only do so much office work each day or administration, and I just, you know, go crazy. I have to sit down and write funny poetry and, you know, just imaginative things. But simultaneously, I have to work or else I get sick. You know? So I have a small yard here around our house, and I got a push lawnmower. Everybody was aghast, you know. My God, you got a push lawnmower. You know? And I went out and pushed it around. And it's you know, I don't have to go to any gymnasium now. You just do the work. You know? You look at it, feel satisfied. Watch out for the poison ivy, because I'm 70% pitta. So even look at the poison ivy, it gets me. You know, then I have to go on steroids twice to get rid of it. Okay. Yeah. So understand our mind, body, and intelligence. Understand our spiritual development. Okay. And then be honest and apply the process at that point. There'll always be people more advanced than we are, always people less advanced. You know? And then where are we? Yeah, that's the best position for us. And understand it, you know? And then make progress. So, and understand ISKCON, our social body, our religion. You know? Personally, I was very much confronted with this because, for example, I'm here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and it's like, you know, 40 minutes with minimal traffic up to the airport. And usually what was happening before was that Abhishek, the Dagorsinger's son, would be around or something. I'd get a ride to the airport. Or else I would go over to Tandavika's house on Friday when he's here for the programs with his family. And then he goes to work near the airport, so he would just kick me up to the airport and drop me off and pick me up. But Tandavika quit his job to get a better job. Abhishek went off to law school. So I'm sitting here trying to figure out how to get to the airport, you know. Then Nitya Gaur Sundar's daughter, Manjari, says, I can take you, you know. But But she's like a unmarried, you know, what, something, I don't know, 21-year-old girl or something, you know. So here, what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to sit in the car with a, you know, driving around, here's a sannyasi driving around with a very, you know, attractive young 21-year-old girl. And I don't feel any, you know, weird attraction for her. But it's a fact. I have a suspicion that every woman, you know, when she sees a man with a big mustache, has some reaction. And probably most of us, when we see a woman with swollen breasts, you know, not too swollen, you know, and I guess not too big of a mustache, you feel some reaction. This is natural, you know. But we then this very easily control our dog-like, you know, Western mind and body, and keep it on a higher platform like that and so on, you know. But if we have this stimulation again and again, then maybe it starts to become joking, you know. And the joking starts to become anger, misunderstandings, you know. And then it starts to become, you know, plans and thoughts start to get us and develop us. And you think, well, you know, I don't know if Prabhupada wants me to chant all my rounds right now anyway. I've heard this, you know. You know, I'm chanting 10 rounds a day, Prabhu, and that's what I think Prabhupada wants for me to do right now, you know. Or, you know, well, Prabhu, we have to get the management work done. So in ISKCON, we have this open door policy that a sannyasi who's taken up the responsibility of management because nobody else can do it will be talking with important girls in the management structure, but the door will be open when they're talking, even though it's upstairs, down the hall, down the second hall, you know, in the back part of the temple where nobody on earth will ever go, like that and so on, you know. So in our sannyasa ashram, we have these discussions, you know, is this open door policy really bona fide, or should we, as sannyasis, give it up? And, you know, I asked our sannyas minister, Lord Namaswami, what his policy about associating with the opposite sex was. And he said that he would talk with girls when they were, you know, like public hours, office or something, but when there were at least two of them, like that, he would talk to them and so on. You know. So it's a big topic, you know, how the sannyas ashram and the shastra conjunction. And also there's the community of sannyasis, and we need more. Actually, a sannyas newsletter has started. And I think this is extremely important. Our sannyasa ashram has to become stronger, clearer, purer, and it has to give, has to be so that the GBC feels, okay, we're protected and guided by the sannyas community. It's not a formal group. Maybe it manifests some formal groups. It has a newsletter. But really, it's a sangha, you know, and it's not a formal group like that. But yeah, they have their opinion, and we can see that with devotees. And they're getting perspectives in the preaching, and also they're protecting us from the modes of passion that are automatically there in the management structure. So I was thinking, well, maybe, okay, there's no other option. And also, too, because maybe sometimes people don't understand this. When Prabhupada talks in the Divine and Demoniac Natures, he talks about this, about sannyasa ashram, and he said, a sannyasi is not permitted to talk with a woman in a secluded place. And I think someplace else he says secluded means any place where they could just discuss sex life and nobody would know. So you started applying that strictly. And I used to apply it more strictly than I am now. I wouldn't even talk on a telephone in a public room with a woman on the other end because you don't know what she's saying on the other end. You know. Should get back to this. Maybe I've fallen down here or something. Yeah. Yeah. But then you hear Prabhupada's dealings with different people and different circumstances about it and how he dealt with it. You know? So when he talks about that in the Divine and Demoniac Natures, he says she's not allowed to talk to a woman in a secluded place. And he says this is not because of hatred for women as a class, but it's because there are different rules and regulations in different ashrams like that, you know, for the ultimate goal. Like that. Of course, we have to apply them properly, you know. But the basic principle is there, not talking. Okay, so maybe I could ride with, and maybe then people don't understand this. They don't understand that this is what's going on. They being involved in the Grihastha Ashram, you can't see the subtle things developing. You can't see the joking developing. You can't see the manipulation by anger and you know, small words developing. You can't see the actual, you know, conflicts developing. Yeah. But in the sannyasa ashram, which we follow the rules and regulations, and you can see you settle things like that more easily. You know? And of course, if you're a devotee, it becomes very obvious. So then, you know, if you drive all the way in 40 minutes in a car with another person, don't say anything. You're wondering what's going on here. Although I've done something like that, but boy, it's heavy pressure. I did it one time. Okay, I can get on the cell phone and to be talking to somebody and with a speakerphone on and have a third person there, you know, by the cell phone. Those are the kind of things you face in sannyas life. Or I can take the bus. I investigated that. It took a long time. Actually, the bus, it goes by my door at 5:38 in the morning, half a block away, $4. And it takes an hour to get up in front of Dell computers, get off there, and the black lady at the bus service said, "We always use Allied, dear." Okay, so I call Allied Taxi. Yeah, from there to the, if they can link up with, they end up picking up at the bus stop, drop me off at the airport for $8 and $9. So a little bit slow, but actually sounds pleasant. And then guess what Krishna does? If you want to be a sannyasi, you want to just travel independently and be independent, then he'll supply it. And then for $15, whoop, you know, you can get there and keep your position like that. So it's kind of subtly trying to introduce this into the situation here and not offend anybody that they think, oh, I don't want to, you know, oh, Maharaj thinks that we're unchaste girls and stuff. No, you know. Then Dr. Desai was coming back, and I mentioned to him, he's been driving me, sometimes likes to drive me, because we talk a lot. You know? So he said, I'll check. And so he said, okay, I can drive you. You know. So anyway, that's kind of one practical application of all these things in the modern world. At that point, maybe we'll kind of want to stop. It's an enormous topic. If anybody has at this point any, what do you say, questions, comments, complaints, or contributions, we are here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Wow, that's the three C's. Questions, complaints, comments.
Or contributions.
Four C's. Okay, I've unmuted everybody. Can I just ask you a quick question? So okay. You're saying that Lord Brahma, the manifestation of Va came directly from his body, it's considered his daughter, whereas other manifestations...
No, Va, I don't know. That's Sata Rupa. Now, I don't know if she was created before that or what. I don't know about her. Sata Rupa, at least.
Well, I thought Va was Saraswati. No?
Yeah, she's Saraswati. This is Sata Rupa.
Okay.
The wife of Swayambhu Manu, who then become the father and mother of all the other living entities, I guess, you know. Like that, yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah. But I don't know. But that's what at least that point is saying, that this male female combination is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, I think it's interesting because Adam was put into, like, it was anesthetized and his rib bone was taken out, and then what's her name, Eve was produced from that. So it's kind of like saying almost the same thing without even knowing it. You know, this kind of Brahma didn't create them, but they just kind of came from his body, like that, and so on, material. Product, the kind of Vishnu kind of did it, you know, like that. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
so many funny jokes about men and women, though. God created the universe and was it 6 days, and the seventh day he rested. Then he created women, and since then nobody else has any. Since then nobody has had any rest. Yeah, but. I'm sure it's exactly the same from a woman's point of view, same thing, you know.
Well, you know, for myself, you know, I'm in almost in my 60s, and certainly, you know, the desires still come in the brain, come in the mind.
Oh, yeah.
After a while, you should get the relief. Yeah. But then you look
for...
One
of our disciples is... was a monk, Lakshmanaga Jahadas, and he said that when he was a Catholic monk, didn't take his final vows. But anyway, so they had his father superior, like Guru type guy, and so one of the guys, younger monks, was agitated guy, and he said, he asked him, he said, "Father, will this sex desire ever go away?" And he said, the father looked at him and he said, "Yes, 5 minutes after you die."
So it said, we're going to be harassed like this all the way up to
because of the body we've taken, as we probably said, because of the birth we've taken, it will always be there. But if we engage in devotional services, it'll become insignificant. You know, we won't even notice it really at that point. You know, yeah. It's just like if you have some physical disability, as we go, Gistayis for Baba Janataya, says in the tradition, Nika. Maybe you have some defect. You have some distortion to your face. It's not going to go away when you become a devotee. You know? As far as I know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati has buck teeth. If someone told me that and I've noticed, I've never seen a picture of him smiling, you know. You know? Okay. So if it didn't change, you know, it's still there, but it's not a point that anybody, you know, cares about after a certain point. You know?
If you do a query on as long as the body, and it comes up a lot of places, like for instance in Preetu Maharaj with the meeting with the four Kumars, there's one thing it says, as long as the body is there, it is subject to the influence of climatic changes, disease, natural disturbances, the threefold miseries. We cannot avoid them. Sometimes, and then he goes on, it sounds more like almost a letter. He says, sometimes we receive letters from the devotees questioning why I've fallen sick, although pursuing Krishna consciousness. They should learn from this verse that they have to become tolerant. This is the world of duality. One should not think because he's fallen sick, he's fallen from Krishna consciousness. So let's see, what's this verse here? It's 4:22:44. And go up for a second with a big purple.
Somebody's banging on the desk there.
Yeah, I'm trying to use the up arrow now then. So there's a candidate, here it is, a candidate for spiritual advancement must be nonviolent, must follow in the footsteps of the great acharyas, must always remember the nectar of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, must follow the regulative principles without material desire, and while following the regulative principles, one should not blaspheme others. The devotee should lead a very simple life and not be disturbed by the duality of opposing elements. He must learn to tolerate them. But there's also I was looking for the one in the Bhagavad Gita where it mentions, as long as the body is there, the demands of the senses will remain.
Yeah.
So when you don't listen to them, that's a very significant part of your Krishna consciousness. I know these, because I was just thinking about today with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs. He writes all these songs from the viewpoint of a materialist. And I was thinking it's because you actually still get you get those thoughts, but you deal with them Krishna consciously.
They can be motivation. I mean, you can turn them into a positive motivation in every case.
Yeah,
other thing is too is that sometimes, for example, somebody asked Prabhupada supposedly, when you touch a doorknob, Prabhupada, does it become spiritual? Then Prabhupada said, as long as I'm touching it, you know. So maybe the same thing too is that a pure devotee is subjected to these things, but if Krishna wants the body to do something else, and the devotee wants, maybe the devotee says, Krishna, please, can you adjust this? And Krishna says, well, no, let's do it because it's important like this. You say, okay, Krishna. Or he says, okay, we'll do it that way, yeah. And so that in that sense, I lost my connection here, so I'm going to put in g@yahoo.com. Why not? Okay, yeah. In that sense, then, Krishna can give us a shakti that we don't get diseases, or when we're supposed to be having a disease, it doesn't manifest, or we can lift up things that we can't lift up, you know. So normally, it goes on the way, and we just use it, you know, for Krishna's service, you know. But then when it's necessary, Krishna can give a special shakti that, no, we're not subjected to these things, you know, diseases and all these kind of things.
Mm-hmm. it just seems like that's a part of the mindset that it's a little pretentious to, well, for me anyway, to think that these things aren't going to come into the mind, but we've been trained to how to deal with it.
Yeah. Prabhupada said, I've been a sannyasi for many years, right? You know this, right? And he said, but I still have sometimes think of my wife and in my former life. And he said, this is natural. He said, but I don't go back. That is intelligence. Yeah.
I found what it was. It was on
okay.
6:20, I guess through 23, the Bhagavad Gita verses. So it says, as long as the body exists, one has to meet the demands of the body, namely eating, sleeping. Actually, this was a different one than the one I was thinking. But a person who is in pure bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness does not arouse the senses while meeting the demands of the body. Rather, he accepts the bare necessities. And then he says, making the best use of a bad bargain and enjoys transcendental happiness in Krishna consciousness. He's callous towards incidental occurrences such as accidents, disease, scarcity, or even death of a most dear relative. But he's always alert to execute his duties in Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga. Accidents never deviate him from his duty.
I think it's the world. Hamlet tells Horatio, the world is much more, there are many, many strange things in this world which go beyond your philosophy or mine, Horatio. One of the things is there's so many things we don't understand. So many things we're not going to understand. Yeah, and for the most part, they haven't got much to do with us. Once we adopt that attitude and that perspective, then we try and see the things that have things to do with us. But other things, okay, like you say, there's just Krishna has his games.
And what I've noticed is, if you make an offense, then you don't have the strength to rebuttal the senses in the mind when it comes up. If you're in good shape, it comes, you can almost kind of laugh that, how can that so horrible, how can I be attracted to that? But if you make an offense, hey, I'm attracted again. it's scary.
You have no offenses, so you get no rasa from your personal relationships, and you start looking for rasa and chocolate chip ice cream or something. Okay, I guess it's kind of our perspective, and we're doing this whole Bhakti Bhai Baba program is really kind of developing. I'm trying to work with the Ministry of Education here and the Shastric Studies, and listening to the comments from all you and other people. Tomorrow we'll go. The doctor decided the airport, fly to Denver, fly to Boise. Have a week there, and we're calling it a Northwest Regional Education Symposium with Ministry. And Ananta Roop will be there. Of course, is Radhika's father, Radhika Raman. Shubhas Pandit is coming from San Jose, who was developing the Bhakti Bhai Baba program there. Vaisheshika will give us an online class. I talked him into doing four master's classes on the four years that we divided Bhakti Bhai Baba into. So next Sunday, Saturday after next, Sita Devi's appearance day, he'll be doing a class on first two cantos. And I wanted to do the whole first six cantos on preaching strategies in the Bhagavatam. Because you can look at the Bhagavatam as being nothing more than a preacher's training manual, preacher's training course, how to preach to anybody and everybody. It would be Vaisheshika looking it over and discussing, contemplating a little bit the first two cantos, what kind of strategies and approaches to preaching we see, under what circumstances. And Bhadi will be there. So hopefully we have some good discussions about this, because I'm really hoping we can put educational development on the same level as temple construction. The actual event is actually a temple construction expansion opening project. They acquired a piece of property right behind the temple property, like about six times as big. And of course, a lot of work. But now they have a guest house, a community hall, and some nice garden property and parking space. But it took so much force, you know. And so now they're struggling with the Bhagavatam class. And the same
so
with
who
the
got that
temple?
Temple?
Boise. Yeah. Yeah. And they're saying we can't keep a Bhagavatam class going in the morning. So I'm always citing this project right here. No. Because small temple can do a very nice program and get a nice community and stuff like that and so on.
Mars.
So working on that, and then we hope to be in touch with everybody. You know?
Can you make sure that you give us a report on that? That sounds really interesting, how you can use a Bhagavatam as a preach, how do you say, as a preaching manual? Wow, that's interesting perspective.
No, that's the whole point, no? It's nothing but, what is it full? It's full of nothing but preaching situations, teaching situations for, you know, to achieve the ultimate goal, yeah, like that. So anyway, the class will be there, be recorded by Sheshika Das. So thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Maharaj, for your association.
Okay, and be careful of people with big mustaches or swollen breasts.
Definitely.
And especially if be careful of people who have both, I guess. Anybody with a big mustache and swollen breasts, then you really, yeah, try and pinch yourself. Haribol.
Thank you, Maharaj. Haribol.
Haribol. Haribol.